Our sponsor for this month is Indigo Sundries. Indigo Sundries Soap Company is a Christian, family-owned, and operated small business that has been making soap for over 20 years. All of their products are free from seed oils, parabens, phthalates, petroleums, preservatives, and sulfates. They offer a large variety of scented soaps using premium fragrances, and also a selection of essential oil-only soaps for people with more crunchy convictions, as well as several non-scented soap options such as four different clay soaps, calendula, and talobar. All made with their proprietary recipe, the result is long-lasting cleansing and moisturizing bars of soap that will leave your skin feeling great. Plus, they offer liquid soaps, room sprays, and beard products as well. I personally got a bar of their soap this summer at a conference and absolutely fell in love with them. I hope you try them out. You can use a coupon code FRUITFUL10 to receive 10% off your order.
Welcome to the Fruitful and Fearless podcast, where we're serving up gospel-fueled courage to the Christian woman to remain faithful in her calling.
Check 1, 2.
Check 1, 2.
Check 1, 2.
Check 1, 2.
Did you shut that door?
Mm-hmm. Hello? Is that okay? We good? Hello and welcome to the Fruitful and Fearless podcast. Jared and I are here today to talk to you about winter preparedness. We had an amazing ice storm in Southern Illinois, a few weeks ago. And it was absolutely amazing.
Beautiful.
It was one of the most beautiful things I have ever seen. I was thinking about that. It looked like the whole world was a blown glass sculpture.
Well, it was different than a normal snowstorm or winter storm because it was ice, snow. And so there were layers to it.
Yeah.
And it was really pretty among the trees. And
yeah.
I mean, it's really everywhere.
One of the two most beautiful things I've ever seen. Sunsets in Hawaii and then this ice storm.
Okay. It was amazing.
It was amazing. And then the sun shone on all of the icy trees and they all glittered like crazy. It felt like you were in a movie, like some kind of fantasy snow world movie. And I really liked it.
I think the most fun I had with all of it, of course, it was aesthetically pleasing. It was beautiful. But we went down the roads dragging the kids and, you know, the roads were a perfect place to sled. And before the snowplow got here, me and the boys had a really great time. We were going down jamming out to DC Talk. The boys have discovered DC Talk. So we were jamming out to DC Talk and then Zach Top and a bunch of other stuff as well. And just dragging, you know, the kids down the road. And it was pretty fun.
So we had just a circle sled, a blue circle sled. And it's not that
like
great.
Like a Walmart sled.
We did find out that the Ramsey's red sled with the rope on it, that's the ideal type of sled if you're just going to go down a hill. It's like a rectangle with a rope on the front. About like the center of gravity, as you pull back on that rope, you can go way further than on our circle sled. So if you're buying a sled, you should definitely get one of the classic rectangle ones with a rope.
Like the Ramsey's have.
Yeah. Like the Ramsey's have. But one thing that I invented this year was snow kayaking.
That was fun.
That was so we have some hills out where we live, but nothing huge. And Jared has a hauler. So we were pulling the kids behind the hauler. And I was like, oh, we have canoes. That was my first thought.
Kayaks. We have kayaks.
No. My first thought was canoe.
Oh, canoe. Oh, man, that would get wild.
A canoe up to the hauler and pull a canoe around our yard. And then I thought, that's probably too much. And then it hit me that we have the kid kayak.
Yeah.
So we have like a child size above water kayak. And that was the perfect size.
That you sit on, not sit in.
Yeah, you sit on top of it. So we hooked that up the hauler and pulled that around, and that was a blast.
We put it in four-wheel drive, and I just dragged kids everywhere.
It was so much fun.
It was a lot of fun. It really was.
So anyways, the tree. Oh, one more thing about the trees. My mom has a twisty willow tree, and it's a willow tree, but it's more like a bush willow. It doesn't hang down. It's like a bushy tree with thin, spirally branches. And that got covered in ice, and that really was incredible. It really was like
a blast. I'm surprised that didn't snap.
No, you know, it's
in a million places.
I think because there's still so much moisture in the branches that it just is able to bend and flow.
Well, that was the main problem.
Good lesson in personality types. Be like a willow.
You gotta be able to bend. Yeah, flexible.
Except for our weeping willow on the road really
did bend
snap.
And don't break. Yeah. The willow at the end of the road broke, which is sad because it was big, beautiful weeping willow that we all loved. Ransom was pretty upset about that. It was a bummer. You know?
But it'll be okay. It's still going to live and it'll fill back
I think. Hopefully they don't tear it down or cut it down.
You know what was incredible? Our pine tree over in the field that was completely bent over.
Yeah.
Like, completely bent over.
I thought it was going to snap. I did.
And it just hung there. No big deal.
It's slowly bending back to place.
Too.
Yeah, it's slow. But the weird thing is there's a lot of pines down the road that lost a lot of branches, hundreds of branches. We have neighbors that have kind of like a pine forest, and their pine forest looked like a war zone. So when we first had this ice storm, we were warned there's going to be a lot of electricity out. A lot of people are going to lose electricity. There's going to be a lot of trees down. There's going to be a lot of ice. And I think we got like 3/4 of an inch of ice to almost an inch of ice in some places. So it was a lot of weight on all these trees. Well, we had one big cedar tree that split in half, kind of like it was a pretty big branch that came out and broke. And then we had a bush willow tree that broke. And then we had one cherry tree limb that broke in our backyard. So for us, we didn't get a whole lot of damage.
It wasn't bad for us.
Even though we got a lot of ice, there wasn't a lot of damage. So my thought was, well, it isn't too bad. And then we started going down the road and we left the house and started looking around the neighborhood. And then we actually went to the Ramseys. The Ramseys' house was there. They had hundreds of thousands of branches. I mean, their branches were everywhere. It looked like a war zone. And so the whole neighborhood was pretty bad. And then the whole region, we realized, was pretty bad. Tons of people lost electricity. We didn't lose electricity, even though what we're talking about today, I was prepared for it. I was kind of bummed. We didn't lose electricity at all.
You were probably one of the only people that was like, man, I kind of hope we lose electricity for a while.
Yeah, because we weren't going to miss a beat. But
he has toys that he wanted to play with, like a generator and things like that he wanted to test out.
Yes, yeah, super ready.
He was a little bummed that we didn't lose electricity, but a lot of people did because these branches were falling on power lines, and there were some people.
We had friends that lost electricity for 72 hours, I think.
Oh, the Perrys. They had branches that had fallen on power lines on their roads. Mm-hmm. So they were advised not to leave the house because it's so dangerous. All the linemen were so busy that they couldn't get to certain parts of the region as quickly as they needed to. So you just had to stay in your house because it was dangerous to go out with these power lines.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of people that lost power and
couldn't get out.
And some that didn't have alternative heat or anything like that. And that's what we want to talk about is preparedness, really not just for the winter, but for storms and what, you know, lessons learned. I think a lot of people in this area probably went out and bought generators and alternative forms of heat and that sort of thing. But it's always good to be thinking ahead. So we wanted to do an episode talking about what we've done and maybe what you could do.
Our sponsor for this month is Lily K Designs. Through landscapes, rich colors, and soft lighting, she strives to capture in her paintings this feeling of joy, nostalgia, and an indescribable ache that we experience when we see something truly beautiful. When hope, joy, and attention to detail intersect within a painting, there, the beauty of our world can be rediscovered through the lens of an artist. From looming mountains to clear blue lakes to even a beloved well-used swing, she creates and captures this interpretation of nostalgia, whimsy, and joy combined within the subject that is presented. She dabbles in a bit of everything with her art. She uses a variety of mediums, and she also creates custom paintings. Something that I've found really interesting with her work is her custom paintings, primarily landscapes and places that have become special for her clients. Whether she's painting a special location that your family returns to and visit year after year, that you want to have that permanent memory of in a beautiful painting on your wall, or a beautiful wood that your children play in. Her clients leave with an artistic rendition of a place that means something very special to them. She creates custom pieces within a thick gallery-wrapped canvas so that it is ready to hang on the wall with no frame required. And the thicker gallery canvas provides a sturdy and durable quality to the painting. Each painting is sealed with varnish that will preserve the painting for years to come. She also does art lessons if you have a student that you would like to contact her about.
You can find out more about her artwork by going to her website at lilykdesigns.com. That's LILLYKdesigns.com. Or by reaching out to her on Instagram at lilykdesigns. Yeah. Proverbs 31, woman, she is prepared for the time to come. She's able to laugh at the days to come and not be fearful of them. And one thing about being fearless is to be mindful of what you might need. And it helps you to not fear. Like when the snowstorm was coming, I had no fear. I was only excited because of a lot of the work that Jared has done for our family in preparing for things like that. I wasn't worried that we would lose power. I wasn't worried that we would be cold. I wasn't worried about our food in the freezers. I wasn't worried about any of that because I knew that Jared had done so much in preparing. And so Proverbs 31:21, she's not afraid of snow for her household, for a house is clothed in scarlet. So one thing that we want to think about when it comes to snowstorms or just anything that might be popping up is what can we do now when there's not a snowstorm? When there's not a
snowstorm. Snowstorm.
What can we do now when there's not a snowstorm to prepare for when there is, that we can laugh and be joyful in that season and not be worried or stressed?
Now, some of these will apply for spring storms as well. So think tornado, electricity going out in the spring, you're going to need different things than you're going to need in the wintertime. So some of these will just apply across the board. But when you're thinking about wintertime storms and snow, one of the things you need immediately is alternative heat. So you've got to be thinking about that. So if you don't have gas heat, if you don't have a gas furnace, you know, you run everything on electric, well, then you've got to find a way to get some sort of heat in your home. So what we did a few years ago is we got a wood stove. I love having a wood stove, and I was able to go through Facebook Marketplace. You got to find a UL listed. Depends on what state you're at, because different states have different regulations that you got to look into. In fact, our friends out in Utah, I don't think they're allowed in their region to have a wood stove. It's actually illegal, which is criminal. It's absolutely ridiculous. We live in Illinois, and we think we have a lot of red tape. There's some states that won't even allow you to have a wood stove for various reasons. I don't really know why, other than tyranny. Get a wood stove or something like that, a gas wood stove or gas fireplace. We actually have a gas fireplace and we have a wood stove, so that covers our heat. And if our electricity goes out, you can still burn wood. You can still stay warm. You're not dependent upon any sort of alternative electric heat. You can get space heaters and things like that, but that's dependent upon you having a generator and electricity. The other thing that you can get that would be really good is what we got for a garage, which is a 30,000 BTU garage. And it's indoor, outdoor, or in garage. It'll shut itself off. It's not going to kill you with carbon monoxide or anything like that. You may smell some gas fumes, but you should be all right. It's supposed to be indoor safe. You can get them at Mr. Heater, or I think Dynaglow is what ours is. And you can get a blue flame heater, or you can get a infrared, like it's like a honeycomb, different panels that can heat up to, I think, 1,000 square feet. So a 30,000 BTU unit will heat up to 1,000 square feet, I believe.
They work on propane, right?
And they will run on propane. No electricity is needed at all. So you can get a propane tank, get a 100-pound tank, get a 40-pound tank, something like that. Even the small 20-pound tanks will run it for, I mean, if you run it on level one or level two, it'll run a unit like that for a few days.
Okay, so to the women out here that just heard you speak a foreign language and they're like, what are all those letters and words you just said? Where could they go to get information like, okay, this is what I actually need for my house?
Okay, well, talk to your husband about this. Just do some research. If you're wanting a wood stove, when I say UL listed, if you're wanting to have your insurance cover your house still, you have to get a UL listed wood stove. That is
because it has certain safety features.
Yeah, it's got safety features. And if you put an old wood stove, like an old timer wood stove that is in cabins and it's in old houses and basements all across the country.
They're cute and dangerous.
Yeah, they're cute and dangerous. Plus, you don't have a glass window. You can't really see the flame, which is a bummer. The wood stove actually has a really interesting history. Benjamin Franklin actually designed the Franklin wood stove, which had a ventilation that went up through a chimney still. But what would happen with fireplaces is that you would lose not only your smoke, which you want to lose, you want your smoke to be ventilated out of your house, but you'd lose your heat as well, because a fireplace doesn't heat a lot of a room. It doesn't have a high BTU count because it sends its heat directly up out of the chimney. So the chimney gets hot and it radiates a little bit off of the bricks into the house and around that chimney. But the Franklin wood stove invented a wood box that would still send the smoke up and out of the chimney, but it would keep the heat in the house because it removed the wood box out into the room. And so a wood stove, that's where it has its beginnings. But you want to find one that is also rated for not just with the UL listing on it, but it's also rated on the unit itself for how many square feet it is built to heat. So ours in our basement is 1,500 square feet, and then we've got 1,500 square feet on top. Ours is rated for 1,800 square feet. So what I knew is that heat would radiate up to the top. I knew it might be a little small for our house, but most likely it would heat our whole house, and it heats everything. You know, even if it's 5 degrees outside or 5 degrees below, we can keep our house at 70 degrees. Except for our bedroom, which is the furthest room from the wood stove. So,
but it's still bearable in here. Like the coldest it ever gets is like 62 in here in the middle of the night, which I don't mind because it feels good to sleep in the cold.
So with a wood stove, you're not looking necessarily for the BTUs. You're looking for, it'll say on the back, it'll translate it for you. How many square feet is this particular wood stove rated for? And then you can go from there. And the pipe for a wood stove, depending upon if you have two levels or just one level in your home, is going to be really expensive if you have to get double vented for your down. So like basically you have cheap pipe and expensive pipe. And if you have to go through multiple floors, you'll have to have expensive pipe through multiple floors. That can get pricey. But if you have one floor ranch style house, you can get a wood stove and your pipe and everything installed probably for under $2,000, which isn't too bad.
It probably depends where you live and who you're contracting out to install it and all that kind of stuff. But
yeah.
Usually, generally speaking, that's probably about
it. And usually your insurance company wants a professional to install it.
Yeah.
So you just have to get all your ducks in a row of how you're going to do it and then find a place in your home for that that's central in your home. And that's a great, great way to heat your home. So that and the alternative heat of those, you know, cheaper way to do it is just go to, you know, Rural King or Tractor Supply or something like that and get that Mr. Heater or DynaGlow 30,000 BTU unit. That would heat 1,000 square feet.
Yeah. So just some form of heat that you can have in case the power is off.
Yeah.
One note on this, whenever Jared, I think it was 2020 when you got the wood stove.
I think so.
Whenever Jared was telling me he was going to get a wood stove, I was really anti-wood stove because of my concern of how the chimney might look on the roof.
Yeah.
That was my big concern, was the chimney on the roof and how that was going to look. And after we got it, I immediately was like, oh, I actually really love this. But this year, I especially was like, thank you so much for not listening to my very silly concerns about why we maybe should or shouldn't get the wood stove. And it was a great lesson. And just like,
that was one of those instances where I was kind of like, well, we're getting a wood stove, whether you want it or not.
Yeah.
So,
and I'm so thankful that you did that. It was just such peace of mind through this storm, especially, and many other times. And I loved it immediately. But yeah, trust your husbands when they want to get something that might help your family.
That was fun. Well, as soon as we got it installed, you started liking it. And I knew you would, because the aesthetics of it all looked really great.
It looks awesome. So cute.
Yeah. But that is your alternative heat. You have to have alternative heat, but you also need alternative energy. And that means you're going to be having to think through about a generator. And we have two options with our generators that I wanted to get. So the first one I got, and you need to get over a 36,000 watt generator because you want to run your refrigerators and freezers. You're concerned about your meat in your freezer. And if you get a quarter of a cow, or if you're hunting and you got your wild game in your freezer, or, you know, you get a quarter hog or a whole hog or something like that, and you've got your freezer full, obviously you don't want your meat to go bad. So generally speaking, when your electricity goes out, you're only losing electricity for a few hours at a time, unless there's a storm like this, and then it can be up to 36, 48, 72 hours, something like that.
Yeah, we had friends that lost for four days.
For a while, right. And then
at that point, your meat's bad you don't have.
Absolutely. Well, and if you remember a few years ago down in Texas, there was a storm that came through, an ice storm like we experienced, and they had electricity out for a long, long time. I mean, some people a week or two or even longer without electricity. So it can be a very long, you know, you just got to be prepared for those kinds of things. Most likely, you're not going to experience an outage that's, you know, a very long period of time. But if you do, you want to have that ability to keep your meat frozen. So a 36,000 watt generator will run two refrigerators or freezers, two freezers. We have in our garage, we have a freezer refrigerator, just a fridge with a small freezer. And we've got a, I think a 40 cubic feet stand up freezer. That's a good big freezer. And both of those have to stay, you know, running or we're going to lose a lot of meat. We've lost meat before and not because our electricity went out, but because of another reason. We left a door open and then we ended up spoiling a lot of meat, which was a huge bummer. But now we've got an alarm on there to make sure that doesn't happen again. So get a 36,000 watt because you'll be able to run that. And then you'll also be able to run lights in your home. You'll be able to run whatever. And by the way, we have a third refrigerator, main refrigerator in our house. So we have a 36,000 watt generator. We'll run all three of those refrigerators. And then we'll run some, you know, lights as well, especially if they're LED lights. If you're not running old incandescent light bulbs still, which are great and actually are, I like them better. But if you're running just some LED lights, you'll be able to charge your phones. You'll be able to charge certain things that you want to keep running, flashlights, whatever it is that you want to, you know, keep for nighttime. Those things will be able to run on a 36,000 watt generator. Now, I got a propane generator and an electric generator option. So, I mean, a gasoline generator option. So I can run with gasoline and I can run with propane. Now, when you have a generator like that, you actually can only run 32,000 watts on a propane generator. So when you have gasoline running, you can run for 4 to 6 hours, something like that, depending upon how big your tank is on one tank of gas to keep that gas generator going. Propane, if you have a propane tank already, you can just put that into your generator and run that for days and it'll run that unit, but you will run less power by running propane. But that is a really good option for you. It's going to make you really durable. And if you can run on propane or on gasoline, you're good to go.
And one thing about generators, we knew one family that had a generator but hadn't maintained it. So when the time came to use the generator, it wasn't working. It wasn't able to be used. So with a generator, what is the time that people need to do maintenance on that before winter storms? So that, and what do they need to do just to make sure that if they need it, it is ready?
Well, every 6 months you need to run it. So at least turn it on. You really every quarter would be good to just let it run for 15, 20 minutes. And then if you have fuel that's been sitting in it for a long time, put some fuel stabilizer in it. Your dad taught me about that because when I was a kid, we just didn't ever do that. We just went from the fall or the winter to, you know, through the winter to the spring and then just ran our stuff in the spring. But stabilizer can be helpful, especially if it's going to be sitting for a long time. You also need to look at your manufacturer, instruction manual about changing oil. Your gas generators can be a little bit finicky with oil changes. So you need to change your oil when it says to. And then, you know, just get it out and clean it up and make sure it's easy to start. What you don't want to do is have a ice storm where your electricity go out from a tornado and then all of a sudden, you know, your generator's not running because you haven't started it in 3 years. Mm-hmm. So make sure and get that thing going and you should be good to go. Make sure you have enough fuel and gasoline. That's another thing, is have, you know, 5-10 gallons of gasoline that is, you know, in your garage, in your shed, that you're able to keep that thing going. And that's obviously a really good thing to have. And most likely you have neighbors who have electricity that's out as well, that are going to maybe need to come down and charge their cell phone or come down and charge a few things, because most likely people in your neighborhood or your area are not going to have, if you're listening to this, they're not going to be as prepared as you are just with simple things. Just like, I mean, most of you are going to have a generator to some degree, but if you don't, go get one and then have the gasoline and the fuel that's there for you to keep the thing going. And you don't want to have to run out in the middle of a storm to the gas station to get more, you know, to get more gas to run your, mm-hmm.
yeah.
your stuff.
Yeah.
The other thing is I ended up getting a solar generator this year, and it's only an 1800 watt solar generator, but because it's solar, it's going to be pulling in energy, and you can both input energy and export energy at the same time with this. And I got an EcoFlow. Been watching Wrangler Star for years, and he's all about
which is
the EcoFlow.
Great resource. I wanted you to mention Wrangler Star.
Yeah, Wrangler Star.
It's a YouTube.
It's a lot. He's a lot of fun. Cody Wrangler Star is a lot of fun to watch, and he's the problem is if you start watching him, you want to start buying a bunch of things because he's really good. He's like the guy version of
guy
like
influencer.
Girl. Yeah, of like the girls that get you to buy makeup or whatever, and he's getting you to buy just stuff, tools, guns. Generators, whatever.
But he's really great at teaching what you need.
Yeah. And so now, I mean, I kind of want a skid steer.
We don't need a sponsor, but maybe we do.
Yeah, maybe we do. Drop 80 grand. So I got an EcoFlow generator that is just a huge battery pack. And you can actually stack these batteries. So next year or the year after, I'm going to spend a little bit of money and get actually another battery that goes onto it and connects to it. That's just an alternative. You can have more storage. So you can actually get up to 3,600 watts with that as well. Because right now I'm just at 1,800 watts. So I can run a refrigerator, maybe two with that 1,800 watts. Okay. But it's a really good thing to have. It's just a battery pack, and it you know, runs on solar, so it's going to, within a few hours of good sunlight, recharge itself, keep it going. And that's going to be a way, apart from having to get gasoline or propane, to just run your small appliances to power your electricity for lights, to get your battery packs recharged, to get your phones recharged, and you don't have to have any other fuel. So I love that.
Yeah. Okay. Another thing that's important to think about is, how are you going to cook if the power is out? If there's a big storm, what is your cooking method going to be? For us, we have the wood stove, so it's really easy for me to pop a pot on top of the wood stove, and we can warm and heat a lot of food that way. But if you don't have a wood stove, something handy to have, one of the families in our churches, they just use like a camping stove, and we have one of those that hooks up to a little mini propane tank, and you can just go outside and grill on a little propane camp stove. And those are really inexpensive.
And this is if you don't have a gas range. We have a gas range, so we can just cook on that. But if you don't have that, then that's a really easy way to cook. Really easy. So also water. I mean, your water still, unless you're having like an earthquake or something and you've lost your water still should be good. But it's always good to have a Berkey. So
any kind of gravity water filter system.
Get a water filter. You should be good to go.
And if you don't have one of those, having just some jugs of water prepared, if you know a storm is coming, gather some jugs of water and have it in your pantry just in case something happens and you need some extra water.
But if you have heat and power, you're good to go. I mean, you can last a storm, or you can have electricity go out, and you can be durable for a pretty long time. And, you know, if we lost electricity for a couple of weeks, we'd be okay. We wouldn't have a problem, and we'd probably have a lot of fun with it, honestly. And I know I would.
Another important thing to think about is warmth for your family who might be wanting to go out and play in the snow. So something that we have gotten really into is wool clothing.
Yeah, wool is the best.
Wool is amazing. If you want to get Jared geeking out, talk to him about wool clothing. He really likes wool clothing, and I have come to really like it also. So wool is a natural fiber that's an incredible insulator, even when wet. So when your kids are playing out in the snow and they get snow down in their boots, if they have wool socks on, their feet will actually still stay warm, even though their socks might get wet. So, and a lot of this stuff, you're like, okay, this is expensive. This is expensive. That's expensive. This stuff is as you are able and as you see deals and as your family prioritizes it. It's not an all. Yeah, Facebook Marketplace. This is not an all at one time situation. We buy lots of things on Facebook Marketplace, at estate sales, at yard sales. It's just gaining this knowledge now so that as the next year comes along and you pass a sale. Like one time we were at Merrill, what are those? Outlet Mall.
Mm-hmm.
An outlet store for Merrill. And they had a bunch of wool socks for super cheap. It was in the middle of the summer. It was like a summer vacation in Branson or something.
Mm-hmm.
And they had wool socks on sale for really cheap. So we bought a bunch of wool socks there and just had them. And then now I'm really glad that we had them because we've used them a lot for playing outside. And just if the kids are going to be out for a long period of time and it's cold or at campouts or anything like that, it's really nice to have wool socks on. So keep your eyes peeled for wool socks. And then a lot of people buy a base layer of wool for kids, like insulated underwear type long pants and long sleeve shirt, but wool for that base layer. And that's a great idea too, if you're able to find those. Wool mittens are something that are on my list right now to find for our kids. And then another thing, I'm just learning to crochet, but you can get a skein of wool yarn and crochet a hat for your kid a lot cheaper than you could buy a wool cap. So if you do know how to crochet, just consider buying some actual wool and crocheting beanies for the kids for playing outside in the wintertime. But anyways, wool is really warm and it's great insulator even when wet. So keep your eyes peeled for that.
The other thing that people could have as well is just get a chainsaw, get a good saw, and, you know, have your husband, he probably already has one, but you got to have a saw, be able to cut up branches. You don't need to be dependent upon neighbors to do that. Get a pole saw. If you want to get a pole saw as well, that's something else that's fun to have. And then you can cut branches as they fall. And other than that, I think if they've got heat and electricity, get a saw, you're good to go.
Water.
Yeah, food. Wool.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, that's about it off the top of our heads, but I'm sure you guys have lots more things that you're thinking, oh, they should have said this. One really more cool thing that happened. So we have a band app for our church, like a Christchurch ladies band app. One of the older ladies, the week before the storm came, just got on there and just said, hey, ladies, be a good Proverbs 31 woman and prepare for the storm. Here's some things that you might need. And everyone just kind of commented back and forth and said, hey, here's some things that I do. So anyways, if you have a community and a church that you're a part of, use each other as resources to bounce ideas off of, like, hey, this is coming. Do you have this prepared? Do you have that prepared? And just be helpful to each other, because someone else may think of something that you didn't think of, like, oh, we need to have candles. That might be really helpful if we have some big candles that would be long lasting. If the power goes out, we can easily put a candle in the bathroom and that'll provide plenty of light for that room and not have to worry about any electricity in there. So, you know, just little things like that. The Body of Christ is a great resource. Use them as well.
Also, get flashlights and headlamps.
Okay, yeah. Cool. All right, thanks for listening.
Hey, everyone. We want to thank you so much for listening to the Fruitful and Fearless podcast and continuing to come back. You guys have certainly been an encouragement to us, and we hope we've been an encouragement to you as well. We want to continue this work, and we need your help to do that.
If you'd head over to the Fruitful and Fearless website, it's just fruitfulandfearless.com. You can find memberships there that are different tiers that contain different benefits to you as well. If you want to just support us for the heck of it because you're enjoying the show, that's always a blessing as well. But we try to make it even more worth it for you with recipes, groups for homeschooling and cooking, baking, natural health. We try to put as many resources on there as we can. But thank you for your support. It greatly helps our family.